Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Former Senator Mark Hatfield dies at the age of 89. Two people are found dead in a Salem hot tub. And Voodoo Donuts sets the Guinness Book of World Records for the biggest box.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, August 8th, 2011. As a 23-year-old Navy officer in 1945, Mark Hatfield was among the first American servicemen to personally see the destruction wrought upon Hiroshima by an atomic bomb. That experience helped shape Hatfield into an outspoken critic of war as he went on to become a two-term Republican Oregon governor, then the longest-serving U.S. senator in Oregon history. Hatfield died in Portland on Sunday at the age of 89. The Oregonian reported he passed away at a care center. The cause of death was not immediately released. Hatfield had been increasingly frail over the years. He was elected governor in Oregon in 1958 and reelected in 1962 before winning his first U.S. Senate campaign in 66. He served five terms in the Senate from 1967 to 1997. He's best known at the national level for his pacifist ways, which often put him at odds with fellow Republicans, but endeared him to many Oregonians. At the 1965 National Governors Conference in L.A., he was denounced as a traitor for casting the lone no vote among 50 governors on a resolution supporting President Johnson's policy in Vietnam. In the early 70s, he joined Senator George McGovern of South Dakota to sponsor an amendment seeking to end the Vietnam War, and a decade later, he helped launch a campaign for a nuclear weapons freeze. In 1984, it was disclosed that he had some problems in the 80s, let's just say, with some money being paid for real estate fees to his wife, and he was reprimanded in 1992 by the Senate Ethics Committee. But other than that, no one's perfect, really. And he never lost an election, except in his college days when he was defeated in his bid to become student body president at Willamette University.
He probably had that guy killed later, though.
Probably.
I mean, that's what I would do anyway. You're listening to Legion of News. It is Monday, August 8th, 2011, and good day to you. We are coming to you live from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk-packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. This is Cascadia.fm. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, also science on the march. Read the highlight of your day. You can also get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And you can take it with you on your mobile device if you like as well. It is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Voodoo Donuts broke the Guinness Book of World Records on Saturday for the biggest box of donuts during an event on Portland's Hawthorne Bridge. Yes, it was part of that thing that was going on.
That event.
On the Hawthorne Bridge. Nearly 4,000 donuts went into the box, which ended up weighing 666 pounds. That nearly tripled the previous world record. This, according to officials from PDX Bridge Festival's brunch. What did you just do? I can't hear anything. All right. Sorry.
I didn't do anything.
Oh, yes, you did. The giant pink cardboard box measured nearly 200 cubic feet. The paperwork must be filed with Guinness before the record is officially certified. After the tally, more than 1,400 people in attendance got to share the donuts.
I don't understand. Was the box itself large, or was it just heavy?
I think it was both. The box itself measured nearly 200 cubic feet, and it weighed 666 pounds, and it had almost 4,000 donuts.
Don't big boxes already exist?
But not filled with donuts.
You don't get a Guinness record for putting something that already exists inside something else that already exists.
If you combine them into one thing that has not existed before.
Uh-huh. We have a big metal jack-o'-lantern on the table. Mm-hmm. So if I were to balance a microphone on top of it, I could get a Guinness Book of World Record inclusion for the most microphones balanced on top of a metal jack-o'-lantern.
Indeed, you probably could.
Not a real record.
No. Well, still. No. But anyway, yeah, no, but big boxes.
Doesn't count. Not real.
Really?
No, a record is creating something that in and of itself has never existed before. It's not just the sum of items that have already been extant.
Except in this case, it is,
not
because there
record.
Was already a record for a giant box of donuts.
Doesn't
and this
count.
Was a bigger box of
Completely
donuts.
Completely without merit. Doesn't exist.
Huh?
Not really there.
A man was shot in Northwest Portland.
Not acknowledging it.
Early Sunday morning, and investigators believe it was gang-related.
Shunning it.
Just before 3 a.m., police were responding to the report of a disturbance and shots fired when they found a gunshot victim near Northwest 3rd and Northwest Everett. The victim, 23-year-old Zabian Robert Riley of Portland, was taken to a nearby hospital with gunshot wounds to his right leg. He was listed in serious condition as of Sunday afternoon.
Is there going to be a Warcraft raiding party that goes out for vengeance for Zabian?
Possibly.
Okay.
The suspect was described as a black man wearing a white t-shirt and black pants, so he should be easy to find.
How do you spell Zabian?
X-A-B-I-A-N.
X is for Zabian, who went down in a hail. I'm sorry, was it gunshots?
Yes.
It went down in a hail. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Are you all set up over there? Because, you know.
I don't know. Are you done imagining that I'm unplugging things with the power of my mind?
Well, I'm sitting here. I'm trying to share the news with the people, and you're just fidgeting with things. You're moving chairs, and you're adjusting visos and cans like 6 inches to this way and 4 inches to the left. And
by the way, we should note that this observation is coming from Dawn Taylor, who more than 4 years ago wrote a newspaper article about me, which she noted that I compulsively pick specks of imaginary lint off the desk. So that this should come as a surprise to you rings false to almost everyone.
It's not a surprise. It's a little distracting.
Well, then you shouldn't have to ask the question to answers you already know, Dawn.
Just asking if you're ready yet.
Ready for?
The big show.
I'm doing the big show. Did you not hear the Edward Gorey-esque witticism I just made?
I heard it.
Don't project your life's problems onto me, sister. I'm over here bringing the wit.
Okay. A 64-year-old...
Did I mention I'm shunning that Guinness Book inclusion?
We did. We did cover that.
Okay.
You
not even
it
there.
It does not exist.
No. By dint of my shunning, it has ceased to have any impact or meaningful presence on
this
globe. Is
that the power you have as Portland Entertainer of the Year?
It's not just for unplugging
you
your headphones,
Don. You can just veto things?
That's right. Exactly.
I didn't know you had that. I am in awe.
I don't like to roll it out a lot. I don't like to, one doesn't like to be showy, all Scott Baio-like about one's gifts.
A 64-year-old German woman visiting the Grand Canyon with a tour group died Thursday afternoon after lightning struck the ground nearby. 5 other people received minor injuries from the lightning strike and were treated at the scene. Calls for emergency assistance came in about 1:45 p.m. The lightning struck near Mojave Point, which is on Hermit Road on the south rim of the park. When rangers arrived, CPR was already in progress on the woman who had collapsed. Rangers took over the CPR and moved the woman into an ambulance because lightning remained a threat. However, they could not revive her. The woman's name was being withheld until she could be positively identified and her family notified. Grand Canyon officials recommend that people seek shelter if thunder is heard within 30 seconds after seeing lightning.
If anything like this happens to me, I don't want people to administer CPR. I want people to administer BTO.
Just want them to stand over you singing a little Bachman Turner.
Yeah, maybe with a boombox, if possible.
President Obama offered a reassuring assessment of the U.S. economic situation on Monday. I'm assuming that means he lied to all of us.
Look, I've got a job. I mean, that's really all I care about. I am employed.
I'm doing just fine. Despite a downgrade in the nation's debt credit rating, the president says the financial markets will consider the U.S. a good bet.
Is this credit?
Yes.
Let's see.
No matter what some agency may say,
some agency.
We've always been and always will be a AAA country.
Except we're not, because they downgraded us.
Yeah, it doesn't really see.
It doesn't work that
way. Here's the thing, President Obama. You're not me. You can't just with the power of your mind make something so. So, I mean, whether or not it should mean something, I think when Moody's downgrades us, then it actually does have some sort of... The idea that... Hold on, let's play this one more time. By the way, and for anybody out there, if anybody out there, not that this applies to anybody in our audience, of course, because our audience is made up of only the finest, most fiscally sound and successful people. People for whom, the day-to-day worries and cares of the dollar and cents world are, far from their thoughts. But if anybody out there, has any idea what it's like to deal with a credit company or a credit reporting agency, or to try to get your credit repaired over time, I would like for you now to listen to your president, Mr. Barack Obama, telling you exactly how little importance he believes a, quote, what is it? Some company?
Some agency.
His assessment of credit agencies and reporting firms and their importance.
No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
So
no matter what.
Here's the thing. I want you to do, like, the next time anybody denies you a loan for something, next time you try to buy something and they go, oh, I'm sorry, sir, it seems you lack the appropriate credit for that. Just say, look, I...
No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
And then just demand that they wrap up the item and send it home with you.
Yeah, Standard & Poor's downgraded the United States AAA rating for the first time in history Friday night. This is something that's going to affect markets internationally. This is going to affect the economy globally.
It's a big deal.
It is a huge deal. It's symbolically significant that Standard & Poor's no longer has the U.S. on a list of risk-free borrowers. But it's not just symbolic. I mean, the fact they're downgrading it is a huge, huge deal to every country that we do business with, not just to us. And let's play what he said again here, one more time.
No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
Except we're not a AAA country anymore because they just
changed that.
Maybe
he means that we need someone to call and help us because we're by the side of the road and we're out of gas and one of our tires is flat.
The rating has been lowered to AA+, and Standard & Poor's says that the long-term outlook for the U.S. is so negative, it could lower it again to AA within 2 years,
okay,
which means that our country has little chance of regaining the top rating anywhere in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, we are never going to be able to rent furniture at a reasonable price with the hope to own later on. Here's the thing. As a country, we're kind of stuck right now at like a 51-inch television, and we were hoping to move up to a 56.
Right.
And now that dream has been put on hold. It's been taken away from us.
The president says the problem is a failure to address the country's long-term debt.
Do you think?
We knew from the outset that a prolonged debate over the debt ceiling, a debate where the threat of default was used as a bargaining chip, could do enormous damage to our economy and the world's.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Meanwhile, our Treasury Department has been arguing with Standard & Poor's about this and saying that they made a $2 trillion mistake in their math. And so, therefore, their judgment is flawed. The fact is, none of which makes any difference at all. This is once again, this is like you go into the bank and saying, I had 30 more dollars than you say I had. And the bank just goes, no, you didn't.
Next.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Got it right here.
Thanks so much.
No, you really didn't.
By the way, I will say this. Here's an interesting thing. I was talking to a lawyer friend of mine about this the other day, and he was... he's great because if you get him like a few... I shouldn't even give it away because this is a thing that I really think could have some legs to it. But I want to do at one point just start this recurring segment of him where he just came on and just screamed about things that made no sense. Anyway, the point is you get a couple beers in him and he just starts unloading about like whatever it is that's on the docket recently or whatever cases he's having to deal with. And we somehow got onto we somehow got onto Standard & Poor's and Moody's and the rating and the assessment of the country. And he did note something that is a little insane, which is that private firms like that, like Moody's, for example, that give these huge global assessments of credit. The one sort of insane thing about that almost sounds like a conspiracy theory that is in fact true, is that they are not actually required to reveal the formula or method by which they arrive at any of that. So they literally could just be making it up.
Hmm.
Now, they're probably not, because we are, like, up to our eyeballs in hock, but they're not actually required to reveal the methodology by which any of those things are arrived at. But as somebody says, it does seem like we're an entire country that's just going to be shopping at Rent-A-Center from now on. So,
The response to this has been like, internationally, there have been pieces in, like, commentaries in big newspapers. Like in China, there was a huge commentary in a big Chinese newspaper saying that, you know, the U.S. should get over its addiction to debt and learn to live within its means.
Yeah,
it's like,
well,
thank you so much. And then here, there's also, like, the Los Angeles Times and a couple of other newspapers and business journals are actually attacking Standard & Poor's and saying, why would you do this now? I mean, this is a fragile time for us.
Well, this is like,
Why, seriously?
But this is like, I had a friend of mine, and it's always DJs who do this. DJs are just idiots, all of them, myself included. I mean, I'm no brighter than anybody else. It's just a question of how many times you have to dip your hand in the hot boiling fat before you realize you'll get your car keys later, you know? But DJs are all morons, and I have never known a DJ that did not have at least one purchasing addiction, something that he could not afford and continually compulsively bought. And it's often cars for some reason. DJs and cars, I don't know what the hell that's all about. But I knew this guy, I won't even use his first name, but I knew this guy, and his whole thing, he was one of the, I gotta get a new car every 18 months. Like, why? Why do you have to do that? Well, I have no idea why, but he did. And so what would happen is he would get a new car every 18 months that he couldn't afford. He'd try to dump the old car to then pay for part of the new car. And about every third car would get repossessed, sometimes multiple times. I think like the low or high point, depending on whether you're him or me, came when he heard this sort of rustling around, as he put it, and some guys from the repo agency had come. I forget if they'd actually broken into his garage or if it was in his driveway, but he had this Stingray, and he had a soft-top convertible Stingray, and they just took a knife and went and just cut through the soft top, put the car into neutral, rolled the car down under the moonless cover of a cloudless night, rolled the soft top Stingray down the driveway, down the street, and he didn't notice them until he was out in his bathrobe on the front lawn and saw them about a block away, saying, "Okay, Zeke, start her up," and then beginning to. And it was one of those things where he said that he was glad he didn't own a gun because he would have killed them. He would have just shot them in his driveway. And then at the end, I just said, "Well, you know, you really couldn't afford that car, Bob." And he just goes, "That's not the point!" And then he just, like, stomped off, which, you know, maybe it's not the point the first time, but, like, the 19th time that happens, it kind of is the point.
I think we're going to start seeing that in the United States. We're going to start waking up in the morning, and entire buildings are just going to be gone.
Seriously.
They'll be, like, repossessing hotels and office complexes, and they'll just, you know, in the dead of night, they'll just load them quietly onto trucks and take them away.
It could be an entire country living on Oriental Avenue.
You know, Arkansas, one morning, just gone.
Yeah.
That's it. They just, and we're going to say, well, I guess we can live without that.
Well, but the
it
thing
is
Arkansas. We shouldn't start with Arkansas, though. We should start with, like, San Francisco, something that's worth something, you know? Seattle.
Something that we really can't afford.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, and that's true, honestly. I mean, you just think about the money it takes to run L.A. I mean, that is just a, we can't even afford the undercarriage coating for that.
No. A man and a woman were found dead early this morning in a backyard spa in West Salem. They were identified as Terry A. Kent and Melinda R. Sweeten, both 57. Deputies were dispatched to the home in the 4700 block of West Lawn Court at 7 a.m. A caller reported the bodies after dropping off his children, who were cared for by one of the deceased. Autopsies were scheduled for tomorrow. A Washington County jail guard was stabbed in the face with a pencil Sunday by an inmate. The deputy was in a jail wing when the inmate came up behind him and stabbed him in the face, according to Sheriff's Office spokesman Sergeant David Thompson. During a fight with the inmate, three other inmates jumped in to help the deputy, Thompson said. A fifth inmate then joined the fight, attacking the deputy. Several more guards arrived and ended the fight.
Someone's doing it wrong.
The deputy was taken to the hospital and treated for puncture wounds to the cheek and near an ear. One of the puncture wounds was close to the deputy's eye. The inmate who first attacked the deputy was Alejandro Arenas Martinez, 20, of Hillsborough. He was in jail for an attempted murder charge. The second inmate, Alfonso Martinez Jr., 30, related? We don't know. He was in jail on a previous probation violation. Both face charges related to the attack.
Blah, blah, blah. Fill him full of lead. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Billionaire Donald Trump has some advice for Congress.
Awesome.
Getting back to this debt crisis thing. He said they should all go back to Washington and solve this crisis once and for all.
I watched their call on the...
Oh, sorry. That's
I watched their call on the mortgage market and on the housing market, and they were 100% wrong on that. And I don't know what they're trying to do by doing this other than get some nice publicity for themselves or to try and salvage their reputation.
This is him actually talking about Standard & Poor's. And who'd have ever thought Donald Trump and Barney Frank, by the way, would
be on the same page with anything.
Be on the same page. Barney Frank said the Standard & Poor's. And here's the quote from Barney Frank, by the way. They're trying to justify their reputation, adding that these are some of the people
who have the worst records of incompetence and irresponsibility around.
Is that your Barney Frank?
That's my Barney Frank.
No. You got to know you're at. You're,
no, he's got the high kind of.
No, you got too
voice.
Many lips there. Bobby Frank is to talk like this.
Oh, all right.
Because he doesn't. He's got a mouth like Touche Turtle.
Oh, okay.
Where it's just like a bunch of. It's just. They're not even really lips. They're just. It's just sort of a feeding hole that just sort of flaps a lot.
All right. Well, anyway, yeah. Trump says a real deal could be passed in just 2 days.
I heard about the wonderful committee, and then I hear Thanksgiving, and then it can be extended beyond that date. And you almost say, what are they doing? Why can't they just do it now?
You know, speaking of Donald Trump, now that there's no chance he'll become president and crush me, I'll next hour on the Rick Emerson Show, during which we will have, is that accurate, Taser?
Yeah, it is. It is, actually.
Again, really?
Yeah, well, you know.
Every day, just peas or...
I keep looking for...
Penis, taser,
I look
taser,
for clowns,
penis.
I look for hicks, I look for all kinds of other things, and it almost always just comes down to penises
penis,
and tasers.
Penis, taser. It's like our own duck, duck, goose. So next hour, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Mr. Aaron Duran at the Week in Geek. We'll talk about last night's Breaking Bad. I think Ryan White from The Oregonian will be here, music editor Ryan White. And I'll tell the Donald Trump story. I'll do that.
And we have a news story from your hometown.
Oh, that's right. I saw that. Yeah, somebody emailed me about that.
Yeah.
Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Officials at the Pittsburgh Zoo and the PPG Aquarium say they're still waiting for South African officials to ship elephant semen to the United States so the zoo can establish North America's first elephant sperm bank.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Tribune Review says the zoo has been working on the plan for nearly 2 years, but they've had difficulty getting export and import permits for the 16 liters of elephant semen being stored in the National Zoo's biobank in Pretoria, South Africa. The Pittsburgh Zoo is working with officials in Germany and France to establish sperm banks in Europe and the U.S. so elephants can be bred without having to ship the animals themselves internationally to mate. Pittsburgh Zoo President and Chief Executive Officer Barbara Baker says it's taking longer than we'd hoped, though officials expect delays because this hasn't been done before. And I have to admit, one of the reasons I read this story is simply because I giggled when I saw the headline, Pittsburgh Zoo still waiting for elephant semen.
Well, I mean, here's a dumb question. I mean, how much semen does it take to impregnate? This is not like how many, you know, whatever does it take to whatever, screw in a light bulb. I mean, is that just for one impregnation?
That I don't know, but I know that's what they're waiting for to establish their actual sperm bank. So they may not need that much for one go. But that's what they were planning.
I mean, like 16 liters of semen, that would impregnate, you know, a lot of smaller creatures. You got to figure,
yes.
Is that just for like one elephant, like twice, or?
I don't know, because elephants are very large. And if you've ever seen, I don't even want to go into this. By the way, now this is also reminding me, somebody tagged me, Futzer. It was Futzer. He tagged me on.
Oh, is it that horrible picture of the zebra with the penis?
Why did he tag us in a photo of him with a zebra with a huge penis?
Oh, I think the answer's obvious, Don.
Why? So now I'm thinking about that, and I don't want to be. I'm going to move on
it's
to something
just,
else.
Really? Is that? That's what's on your mind right now?
Well, I was at a zoo once, and I saw an
elephant. This just in. Don Taylor busy thinking about zebra penis. Once again, Dawn Taylor thinking about zebra penis today.
Well, I'm also
Monday.
Thinking about elephant penis. I was at a zoo once with a friend and her small daughter, and we went to see the elephant. And we were like, oh, the elephant's so adorable. The elephant's so great. We love elephants. And the elephant started urinating, basically. But during the process of urination, it also just unfurled its entire penis. And we were just standing there going, oh, my God. Because when you see something like that just a few yards away from you, it's horrifying, and yet you can't take your eyes away.
It's like a penile car crash.
It really is. And so I would imagine that would probably transport a fair amount of elephant semen.
You know, it doesn't actually, they don't transport it in the penis.
No, I know, but it travels through on its way to its destination.
Okay.
So
I think your grasp of anatomy may be even more tenuous than mine.
Well, I know that they don't keep.
But
it's
that's
not
okay.
Kept in there.
It's not like
I'm
it's not Samsonite. I mean, they don't just.
I'm just saying the entire, you know.
Oh, I know.
Bait and tackle, as it were, is sizable. So therefore, I'm sure. I don't know.
Don Taylor thinking about zebra penis. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Yeah. Several fire departments from Southwest Washington and Oregon were working to put out a sawdust fire at the Port of Longview. Cowlitz County dispatchers said emergency crews were called to the port around 8 p.m. Sunday after two large chip piles caught fire.
This is where is it that this happened?
Longview.
Okay.
Longview Fire Chief Daryl McDaniel said the piles measure 2 acres in size and are each 20 feet high. Members of the Longview Fire Department and Cowlitz 2 Fire and Rescue were called to the scene. At least three Columbia River Fire and Rescue crews from Columbia County and Oregon were assisting. In all, more than 80 fire crews are working to contain the blaze, which was expected to be under control this morning.
Seems like just having huge piles of flammable things sitting around is a bad idea.
Yeah, it's sawdust used to make paper products. But again, wow, 2 acres in size and 20 feet high.
It really is astonishing to think. I mean, I understand why we do it and all, but it's strange to think that we just have, I'm thinking of candles specifically, because we were cleaning out the kitchen the other day, and, it was just because my wife been out of town, and then I was just busy, and, and I'm a slob anyway. And so the house just had that kind of stale smell when there's just, the doors haven't been open for a while, and, and we get the two dogs and then whatever. But, so she was doing the thing of lighting like 100,000 candles in the kitchen just to sort of, to kind of clean the air. And I don't know whether that actually works or if that's a thing we just think works. But the idea that, and I was looking at it and thinking, the idea that we just have little pots of fire that we just keep around our homes because they're pretty is sort of insane when you think about it. When you think about the fact that as, and Bill Bryson talks about the idea of oxygen and how oxygen is harmful, if not flat out lethal, to most things in the universe, except for us. Like, the Earth is really one of the only places where oxygen just doesn't flat out kill everything. What did he say? He said, and he'd be talking about the idea of fire specifically, and of course there's no fire without oxygen, for the most part. And he, I think even phosphorus isn't actually fire. And so, but he was talking about fire needing oxygen, how oxygen is lethal. And he put it in that way that Bill Bryson always does, where he, in that sort of jolly good kind of, he said, "It is in fact so unpredictable that we have fire stations throughout cities to protect us from some of its livelier effects." And I was just looking around the house and just thinking we've just got like little bowls of fire everywhere, any one of which if loosed would just kill us all. So, it's all very strange. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It's Monday, August 8th, 2011. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program with Mr. Aaron Duran, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and recap of last night's Breaking Bad. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science.
Here's your science on the march, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find Squires Electric online at squireselectric.com or at 503-252-1609. You can also find them on Facebook at facebook.com/Squires Electric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and or supervisors. Somebody asked me if that means that they can come out to your home and help with the wiring of your actual components. In other words, you get like some massive TV, or if you got some huge snarl of electrical cables for your stereo system, or for your you're like busy stringing all your audio equipment from one room to the other. I don't know for certain, but I'm guessing here's another thing they could probably do. This is just a guess. They could probably also navigate you through the whole thing of, like, how the hell do I get this television mounted on the wall so that it doesn't just snap off in an hour and a half and shatter itself on the ground and then I have to kill myself. So that would just be a guess. I don't really know, but I do know that that's going to require running cables through the wall. And so if you want to make sure you're not screwing that up yourself, you contact Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. Please tell me you heard it here, won't you please? They are a proud sponsor of this, the Emerson News Network, and the Emerson Radio Program, as well as Legion of News and Science on the March. Don Taylor?
Can I get Ben to come over and help me hang up my Christmas lights?
Sure. Wait, what do you mean by that?
I just, hang up the Christmas lights.
Oh. Put a little star on the tree, as it were?
Yeah. Authorities are investigating the discovery of a decomposing blue shark that was found in the woods in New Hampshire. Police say they found the 6 to 8 foot shark Thursday night after someone reported smelling something that was decomposing. Police told a local news station that they believe someone caught the shark and later decided to get rid of it by dragging it into the woods in the small town of Milton, about a 45-mile drive from the ocean.
Well, that's just weird.
It is very weird. And we have a photo, by the way, of the shark.
Does the shark look really confused?
Well, no, it just looks dead.
Really?
But, yeah. But that's got to be... I want to hear the story. I want to hear about the person who smelled something decomposing and went and looked and then went, that's a shark.
What's that? Shark.
The shark in the woods.
Well, never mind.
Yeah. Ugandan and French scientists have discovered a fossil of a skull of a tree-climbing ape from about 20 million years ago in Uganda's Karamoja region. The scientists discovered the remains on July 18th while looking for fossils in the remnants of an extinct volcano. The area is a semi-arid region in Uganda's northeastern corner. Martin Pickford, a paleontologist from the Collège de France in Paris, de France, said, "This is the first time that the complete skull of an ape of this age has been found. It is a highly important fossil."
Are you just looking for French stories now so you can do that voice?
Yes.
Okay.
Pickford said preliminary studies of the fossil showed that the tree-climbing herbivore, roughly 10 years old when it died, had a head the size of a chimpanzee's, but a brain the size of a baboon, which is a bigger ape. Brigitte Senut, a professor at the Musée National d'Histoire Naturelle,
stop,
said that the remains would be taken to Paris to be x-rayed and documented before being returned to Uganda. "It will be cleaned in France. It will be prepared in France. And then, in about 1 year's time, it will be returned to the country," she said. Uganda's junior minister for tourism, wildlife, and heritage said the skull was a remote cousin of the Hominidea fossil ape.
By the way, I'm loading this this picture of the shark in the woods, which is a little weird. I mean, it's a little
David Lynch, isn't it?
Context really is everything here. Hey, by the way, just here's the punchline that I was going to go to after the shark thing. Uh-huh. When you said ba 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 ba, no idea how the shark got into the woods, and then I was going to say maybe it went after the scuba diver
that fell out of the tree.
See, and then that would have been a little thing. But then I was thinking, well, is that too hackneyed? You know, and then, but in retrospect, no.
No, not really.
No, I should have gone with that.
It's kind of subtle, really.
Well, next time. Yeah.
The lost wreckage of a ship belonging to 17th century pirate Captain Henry Morgan has been discovered in Panama, according to a team of U.S. archaeologists and the maker of Captain Morgan rum. Near the Lajas Reef, where Morgan lost 5 ships in 1671, including his flagship Satisfaction, the team uncovered a portion of the starboard side of a wooden ship's hull and a series of unopened cargo boxes and chests that were encrusted in coral. The cargo is yet to be opened, but Captain Morgan USA, which sells the spiced rum named for the pirate, is clearly hoping there will be liquor in there. Fritz Hanselman, an archaeologist with the River Systems Institute at Texas State University, said there's definitely an irony in the situation. The Captain Morgan Rum Group stepped in on the quest for Captain Morgan after the team, which found a collection of iron cannons nearby, ran out of funds before they could narrow down the quest. The new funding from the Captain Morgan Rum people allowed the team to do a magnetometer survey, which looks for metal by finding any deviation in the Earth's magnetic field. And sure enough, they found Captain Morgan's pirate ship.
Well, it is true that Captain Morgan favored a spicy rum to go with his spicy life, Don.
And by the way, I don't believe there's any irony in this situation whatsoever, despite what this archaeologist said. The fact that they were looking for the Captain Morgan ship and the Captain Morgan people gave them money and they found the Captain
That's
Morgan
actually
ship.
Actually expected.
Yeah, that
makes sense.
There's no irony
it's
there
the opposite
whatsoever.
Of irony. It's not irony.
No.
No irony.
No. No irony. None irony. So the underwater research team included archaeologists and divers from Texas State University, volunteers from the National Park Service's Submerged Resources Center, and people from Wilmington's Aquarius Reef Base. And Hanselman told MSNBC, "To us, the ship is the treasure. The story is the treasure. And you don't have a much better story than Captain Henry Morgan's sack of Panama City and the loss of his 5 ships." Fumigating fresh produce with ozone can remove a large share of fungicide residues present on the surface, although chemical treatments can protect fruits and veggies from insects, fungi, and more. Consumers want those pesticides gone by the time foods reach their lunchbox or dinner table. An international team of researchers has now demonstrated ozone fumigation of Thompson seedless grapes. Although ozone had no effect on several fungicides, it did remove 35% to 64% of 3 commonly used types. The scientists described that use of ozone as a pesticide eraser online in the July 26th issue of Environmental Science and Technology.
Let me rush out and read that right now. Not going to.
That'll be exciting.
No.
An antibiotic often used to fight off lung infections in people with cystic fibrosis may leave the patients vulnerable to a relative of tuberculosis. The antibiotic azithromycin blocks cells' ability to cannibalize themselves, which is a process called autophagy. This according to researchers in England and Colorado. Cells use autophagy for getting rid of damaged parts, recycling nutrients, and also for fighting infections. Over the long term, inhibiting it with the antibiotic allows a nasty bacterium called Mycobacterium abscessus to set up shop in the lungs. So there you go. An antibiotic often used to fight off lung infections for people with cystic fibrosis can give them tuberculosis.
No, it's not tuberculosis. It's a relative of tuberculosis. Right. It's their no-good brother-in-law, Hector. Drives a Torino.
A team of scientists has reported producing viable sperm using the stem cells of mice in an experiment that researchers hope could one day lead to treating infertile men.
We're not going to have to be importing dozens of liters of mouse semen or something for this, are we?
No, okay. We're creating liters of mouse semen from mouse stem cells now. Naturally, this is happening in Japan.
Of course.
The Kyoto University researchers managed to induce mice stem cells into creating sperm precursors, which were transplanted into infertile male mice. The mice then produced sperm that was successfully used to fertilize eggs in a lab dish. The offspring were healthy and fertile, according to a paper published online Thursday in the scientific journal Cell.
How do we induce them to do that? We'd show them little tiny pornographic mouse magazines?
Yes.
Okay.
And little Disney cartoons of a happy swimming sperm. Members of the research team, led by Midanori Saito, believe the success may help in the development of infertility treatments in humans, although they said many hurdles remain. We have high hopes, but it's not that easy, Saito told the Associated Press. There are many difficult issues ahead in applying this to humans, but it is a first step. He said Kyoto's findings were great work, but it's not easy to prepare the mature sperm cells at present. If some of these hurdles are cleared, it could successfully identify which gene is very important to prepare the sperm. And then finally, in young to middle-aged people who have had a stroke, regularly taking a cholesterol-lowering statin drug reduces the risk of a second stroke or a heart attack. This is from researchers at the Helsinki University. The scientists identified 250 people who had a stroke at an average age of 39. The scientists reached 197 of them by phone about 9 years after each of their strokes. Of 143 who were never prescribed a statin afterward, 20% had a subsequent stroke, heart attack, or other vascular problem. Of the 36 who were given a statin off and on, 11% reported one of these incidents. And of 36 who continuously were on a statin after their stroke, absolutely none of them had any vascular problems.
Really? Okay, so because so often it's like you hear about these things and you go, well, that doesn't really work. That's just some crap that they're prescribing to people. And then it's just there to, you know, and I think it is very tempting to sometimes believe that pharmaceutical companies are just basically giving you ground up chalk inside capsules and that it's just a bunch of, or that they are deliberately making something that is underperforming so that they can then sell you like the version later on that actually works better. But it sounds like this is actually like they're really sort of on the, it's the other thing is that the, was it that Lipitor stuff, which is the same thing, where it actually, like, apparently does exactly what it's supposed to do. So, there you go.
Yeah. The problem with the statins is that some people have a bad reaction to them because what they do is they weaken muscles, and they can give people some, they can make people some, like, sick and have achiness and horrible, like, muscle pain and stuff. So some people respond to it very, very
seems
badly.
Like if you had a stroke, though, you want to be necessarily sedentary from that point on.
Probably.
I'm going to make somebody else go to the kitchen for me, you know? Fixing my brakes? No. I'll have somebody else do that for me. That's opening a can of Stag's chili? No. That's
I had a stroke.
People for that. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I have a momentary momentary loss of circulation to the head. You'll have to do that for me.
It's like my husband with his whole, "Hey, I almost died" response to like anything.
Yeah.
Like, "Honey, you going to use that weed eater on the Come on, I almost died."
I'd get used to that if I were you.
Yeah, I know. That's all the science.
Excellent. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or online at Facebook or squireselectric.com online or facebook.com/squireselectric. Or you can call them. It's 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. They are Squires Electric. Coming up a bit later on this hour, you got your entertainment news. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, ladies and gentlefolk. And so forth. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Authorities in St. Petersburg, Florida, say a would-be victim pulled a gun and shot a man who tried to rob him in a restaurant parking lot. St. Petersburg police say the incident happened about 10:30 p.m. Sunday in the Applebee's parking lot located on 4th Street North. Police say Raven Smith and Leslie Tanner were exiting their vehicle to go into the restaurant when 17-year-old Anthony Hauser, wearing a ski mask and armed with a handgun, confronted Tanner. Smith, who possesses a concealed weapons permit, drew his own handgun, and fired at the suspect multiple times. Hauser was struck four times and yelled at Smith to stop shooting. He pulled the mask off his face and claimed the gun he was holding was a fake. Investigators later learned Hauser's gun was actually a fully loaded and operational 25 caliber automatic. After the shooting, Smith flagged down an officer passing in the area, and Hauser was transported to Bayfront Medical Center, where he underwent surgery. Although in serious condition, at last report, Hauser is expected to survive. No charges are pending against Smith, who was acting in defense of Tanner and himself. Police say Hauser, on the other hand, will be charged with two counts of attempted armed robbery. Thieves in Fort Myers, which is also...
That's also in Florida.
Also in Florida, of course. They hit a Fort Myers business plaza for the copper valves there, but it wasn't just water valves that were stolen. They also took something that might have otherwise done some serious damage. The thieves cut through a gas meter, the gas line, and then the plaza's water meters. And they did that to steal the copper. At least three stores in the plaza at Gladiolus and Winkler Road were left with no water. It was all discovered when one of the businesses, a dry cleaner's, was alerted to a gas leak. Daniel Sitchowitz, owner of a shipping store in the plaza, said, "If the gas line would have sparked or fired, my store would have been rubble." That leak was quickly shut off, but store owners soon discovered their water meters had been cut, too. Less than a month ago, thieves had ripped them off in exactly the same way. Next door to Sitchowitz at the Coast Guard Exchange, Alan Weissman said, "I asked, what's wrong with the bathrooms? And they said the water meters had been stolen." On the night of the theft, deputies caught three people behind the plaza next door with burglary tools and a ripped open AC unit. Right now, those three haven't been charged with a crime, but deputies believe they could be involved. The water was eventually restored after crews worked all day to repair the meters.
I don't understand. Why is it that we don't have power outages all the time caused by meth heads that are just sawing through cable lines at substations trying to get... I mean, doesn't that happen like once a day where a squirrel just says, well, I guess I'll reach for this nut that's right over on the... and then it, you know...
I think here in Portland, we just have very, very lazy meth heads. They just don't really want to work for it as hard as they do.
Or they're brilliant somehow.
Like, say, in Florida.
Maybe. I guess. Or they're just... Maybe we have accelerated natural selection. Maybe the Darwinian process of sort of winnowing down to the smartest and sharpest among us. Maybe that's happened at an exponential rate with meth heads and homeless people. Because we've, like, within the first 6 months, we electrocuted all of the dumb ones. And so now that just all that's left are just these like super copper criminals.
Also, we have enough like metal guardrails and things here in Oregon that they probably haven't stolen all of those yet.
We've kept them busy. No, yeah. That's a good idea. That's what cities should do, as just like a diversionary tactic, you know. But make like a huge. It'd be like the citywide version of gluing a quarter to the ground and just watching people try to pick it up. You just get a huge thing that looks like it's really easy to lift, but can't in fact be lifted, like a tipped over street light or something. You know, just it looks like a huge thing of metal that you could just put on a shopping cart and wheel down to the guy, and you know, but make it sort of like comically imbalanced or something, or remote controlled, so that we could just constantly keep it falling out of the shopping cart just as they're about to wheel it away, and you could keep them there for days probably.
Well, you just pull it slowly towards the police station.
Yeah,
yeah, and like the whole trip with the $5 bill and a string.
Exactly, and then you know, and then Otis goes into the tank.
I have this big metal bracket that came with the giant free TV that Mike Russell gave me, so you can mount it to the wall. But there's only one of them, so I can't use it to mount it to the wall because I need two. But the thing is, it's huge, and I took it with me when I moved. I don't know why, because I can't use it. But it weighs like 8 pounds, and I was looking at it the other day and thinking, maybe I could take this to one of these places that buys metal, and I realized I have no idea how you do that or where you go.
Oh, I know where to go with that. But the thing is, they pay you just squat for that. I mean, they pay you almost nothing.
Oh.
You're going to get nothing for it now unless you get another bracket, though. So the question is, are you going to get a matching bracket ever?
No, I'm not.
Well, you know.
So it's just taking up space in my...
No, they pay you so little. I mean, it's like 8 cents a pound or something. Oh. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
So maybe I should just leave it laying on the street somewhere so that some meth guy could pick it up and add it to his collection.
That seems like a great idea. Put metal out on the street near your home. Find out what rats like, too, and sprinkle that around the front.
I'll just sprinkle dog food and copper wires all over my front lawn.
Seriously, and then just spray paint the hours that you are home alone, unattended, you know, out front in the day glow paint.
Middle Eastern markets are highly sensitive to any U.S. economic problems, and they are the ones to take the first bite of the apple. I don't know what that means. Following Friday's S&P downgrade of U.S. credit, Mideast markets were down sharply over the weekend. In Abu Dhabi, Tom Ashby, business editor of The National, an English-language newspaper in the region, says of more concern to that region is the dropping oil prices.
If you remember in previous crises, the oil price has gone up very sharply along with gold. But today you've got gold going up and oil going down, which is, I think, of a great worry to this region.
He sounds delightful.
He really does. No, he sounds like a legitimately happy person.
I want to have coffee with him. I want to hang out with him.
Seems like he'd make you feel better about everything in your life just by dint of like a good 10 minutes over a scone with him, and you'd go out with a brand new look on things.
He's a snappy dresser as well.
But short, I think.
Yeah. Ashby says if oil prices continue to drop, it could spell economic trouble for countries like Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia.
How is it?
Also, I imagine this guy looks like Dominic Monaghan.
See, I wasn't really picturing that. I was picturing sort of who was the guy from, who's the guy from H.R. Puff and Stuff? The kid.
Oh, Tom, no.
He was in Oliver.
Yeah, he was the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Okay, but you remember when he was young before he looked like a mutant? I'm picturing that. Or maybe like a character played by a more youthful Martin Short.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry. Okay.
Now,
so this is...
if the one redeeming factor, this oil price, were to slip away, that would certainly cause a lot of concern and potentially financial instability in the region.
I don't understand. How is it that the fact that we bombed Iraq into kibbles and bits not wrecked their economy?
I don't know.
I mean, the falling oil price isn't great news, but wouldn't it seem like the joint is already just... I mean, is anything... I mean, it seems like we just kind of...
I think we were very, very careful not to bomb too much of, like, I don't know, the oil refineries and stuff, since we want to own them. So that kind of helps keep them going, I suppose.
I don't understand why we continue to do things halfway. I mean, if we're gonna allegedly go to war for oil, why not? I mean, in other words, if the entire country, or the entire world in this case, is going to operate under this, what I believe to be an illusion, that we just went to war for oil, if they're going to think that about us anyway... Like, we might as well just do it. I mean, you know what I mean? If we're going to get tagged with it regardless, if everybody is going to believe you to be guilty of a thing, whether you do it or not, do it. I mean, who cares? So if the entire thing is just going to be that, you know, everybody, you know, no, you know, you're going to war just because of the oil, then, you know, the great thing about that is it frees you up just to go, okay, and then you just take the oil. And so it seems like we ought to be, doing that.
Well, the thing is that we seem to have developed this theory many, many years ago. Where I guess we don't want anyone in the world to think that we're like, say, Hitler. So instead of just marching into countries and just taking them over, we have, you know, the CIA for that. We have black ops. We basically just run these secret spy missions and stuff, and then kill a bunch of people and assassinate a bunch of people and befriend the people that we put in power there and hope that they'll do stuff with us. When in fact, there's a point at which it might just be
really
more
work.
Efficient to just go in and say, okay, they hate us anyway.
Yeah.
What the hell?
No, seriously. No, like this, all of this now, ours.
Yeah.
You can live here. Don't cause trouble.
It would probably cost less than the way we do it.
Yeah.
You know, it would be faster.
I would imagine to the average guy who's just living in a dirt-walled house, too, if we went in and said, look, right now you're living in a pile of dirt. There's going to be a shopping mall here next year, and you'll be able to buy things there. And they'll all be shiny, and many of them will have Dale Earnhardt on them.
We're bringing you indoor plumbing and Walmart.
Seriously, and how about this? How about your average lifespan won't be 12 anymore? Huh? How about that? So it seems like that would be a win for everybody involved.
How about a happy animal story?
So this requires the dog music, you think?
I guess.
This?
This is not a dog story, but it's still.
Okay, we'll call this the catch-all animal.
Okay. A captive-born panda who has never seen a human face has celebrated his first birthday at Wolong Panda Wild Training Base in China. Little Tao Tao was born to his captive-bred mother, Chow Chow, last year. To prevent him from getting used to humans... Since his birth staff have only ever approached him while wearing completely inconspicuous panda suits.
Is this why there's the creepy photograph? Go to rickemerson.com/pictures/visual-aids for August 8th. Okay, I wondered about this because it looked like bad CGI or bad costumes or like cosplay or some weird LARPing thing with furries mixed into it.
To make sure he does not become used to humans and they can release him to the wild... the humans have stayed away from he and his mother, and when they are anywhere in the vicinity, they wear these ridiculous panda suits.
It's awesome. It really is fantastic.
Since his birth, Chow Chow has been learning all of the behaviors pandas need in the wild, such as walking, climbing trees, and looking for food. When he was 6 months old, he and his mother were moved into a large mountainous area for more intensive wild habitat training. Chow Chow now weighs 25 kilograms and is displaying wild panda habits, such as climbing trees and looking for food and water.
I wonder if it unnerves him that the other pandas all seem to be retarded and they walk on two legs.
And they always stand way over there. And they don't actually have eyes.
And they have fixed...
They just have big holes in their head where their eyes are supposed to be.
And weird fixed immobile facial expressions that seem a little creepy / malformed.
Yes.
I mean, he does look a little unnerved. He has this look on his face like, someone take me away from this. I mean, it would just be like... It would be like if somebody wanted you to be, you know, to feel like you were among your own kind. Like if you were kidnapped by aliens. And so they just stuck you with, like, Leatherface, you know? Like a guy just wearing a human mask on his face and thought, well, that'd be fine. It's just like the real thing.
Somebody was just jiggling some mannequins around about, like, 100 yards away.
And occasionally making grunting noises that they thought sounded human. Jesus.
But there you go.
It's really creepy and weird. I mean,
the look on the panda's face is... I'm not buying this a second.
They don't fool me, and I'm not even in the... I'm not a panda.
Yeah, no.
Excellent. All right. Is that your... all right, there you go. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia on FM. Coming up next hour, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek, The Breaking Bad Recap, and more. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday.
Rock legend Greg Allman has canceled tour dates from August 26th to September 15th because of a persistent illness. A statement from Allman's publicist on Monday says the 63-year-old Allman has an upper respiratory condition that will require several days of hospitalization and 4 to 6 weeks of bed rest. Allman underwent a successful liver transplant last year and returned to the road just a few months later. He canceled the final four dates of his recent European tour because of the same illness. Doctors had hoped that rest would resolve the ailment, but Allman has remained sick. Allman plans to reschedule the canceled dates and hopes to return to the road in late fall. Officers performed a pat-down on Big Boy from Outkast when he got off a cruise ship in Miami yesterday and found several drugs on his person.
You should be really white. Be really NPR sounding. Call him Big Bois.
Big Bois. From the popular urban band, Outkast. Cops say U.S. Customs and Border Patrol searched Big Bois after a drug-sniffing dog named Cesar reacted to him. According to the Miami-Dade Police report, the pat-down revealed 5.7 grams of MDMA in powder form, 3 pills of suspect ecstasy, 9 whole pills of Viagra, and 2 half pills of Viagra, and a cigarette roller with suspect marijuana residue. TMZ broke the story. 36-year-old Big Bois was arrested for 3 counts of possession of narcotics and 1 count of possession of drug paraphernalia. On the report, Big Boy, whose real name is Antoine Andre Patton, is listed as 5'7" and 172 pounds with 2 forearm tattoos, dirty on the right and south on the left.
All right, so there you go.
Motley Crue singer Vince Neil is getting an emergency postponement in his Las Vegas trial on misdemeanor charges stemming from a confrontation with an ex-girlfriend at a casino comedy club. A Las Vegas judge granted the request this morning after a brief hearing. The trial was rescheduled for November 7th. A lawyer for Neil did not explain why he was requesting the continuance. Neil did not appear in court for the
I am too fat to get out of the house. Can we do this next week?
I'm tired. This weekend would have been the 100th birthday of Lucille Ball. The comedian is often credited for paving the way for female comedy stars who followed. Ball's sitcom I Love Lucy ran from 1951 to 1957. An entertainment writer for the LA Times, Tom O'Neill, says there's no question as to her show's lasting impact.
Oh, wow. All right, hold on a second. Let's turn Tom O'Neill up a little
bit. Tom O'Neill needs to talk louder.
It is possibly the greatest TV show ever made. It's certainly the most viewed in terms of eyeballs over the last 60 years. More people on this planet have seen that TV show than any other.
Eyeballs. O'Neill says for Ball herself, the show was a career and business cornerstone.
Then off screen, in real life, she not only made this show with Desi, it went on to become Desi Lu Productions, which made all the other great shows from Mission Impossible to The Dick Van Dyke Show. And she was so successful, she turned around and bought RKO, where she used to work.
I didn't know that Desi Lu made Mission Impossible. Good for her. Well done.
O'Neill remembers a favorite and controversial episode from the show when Ball revealed she was pregnant.
It was so controversial at its time, women were not allowed to be pregnant on TV, and you couldn't use the word pregnant. The title of that episode had to be, in French, Lucy is enceinte. And then they had to say she was expecting.
There was actually, I read a great sort of lengthy article about changing mores in television content and censorship and so forth. And they focused on that episode specifically, where they actually brought in a panel of... like a priest, a reverend, ministers from various faiths, a rabbi, and they all sat around and they had this big conclave about what they could, how they would refer to the fact that Lucy was pregnant. And she was allowed to say that she was expecting, she could say she was with child, or she could say what I think the Flintstones actually went with a couple years later, which is to say, she actually could say, we're going to have a baby. She could say that, but she couldn't actually use the word pregnant, which makes you, like, which is bizarre now, but it seems like it must have been bizarre even then, because that's a thing where, like, what is the difference there? Is it that pregnant sounds too clinical?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That's the thing where you're not even referencing a part of the body, which I understand that we're all very skittish about and whatever.
You're talking about an actual biological function, and we can't have that.
But it's not even that. It's not even like you're saying like, and then there's going to be and then he's going to have an operation on his pooper. You're not even having to reference a part of the anatomy. The word pregnant doesn't even by 50 standards, it seems to me, have any relation to profanity. It's just weird. It's very bizarre.
It is. Actor Rowan Atkinson is recovering after crashing his McLaren F1 supercar in Haddon, England on Thursday night. Authorities said alcohol was not a factor in the incident, which Atkinson was able to walk away from with just a minor shoulder injury, even though his car, which cost seven figures, is one of the world's fastest, is said to have struck a tree and a lamppost before it caught on fire.
Wow.
It's interesting, when I was reading about this, by the way, they say he was driving home from London after working on a film that he's working on. The McLaren F1 is one of only 65 models made between 93 and 98. It can accelerate from 0 to 60 in just 3.2 seconds, and it can reach top speeds of 240 miles per hour.
That really is a supercar.
I didn't know this until I read this. Atkinson is the celebrity who has driven the fastest. Clocked the fastest track time on Top Gear.
I remember reading that somewhere, that he was one of those guys, he's one of those sort of Jay Leno guys where he said that he enjoyed the money that came with his increasing fame because it allowed him to buy, to indulge his sort of automobile fetish.
Yeah, this car, I'll let you do the math yourself, but this car would have cost somewhere in the neighborhood of £600,000 when it was new.
That's $1.2 million.
Yeah.
And with that, ladies and gentlefolk, we'll do this, which is bringing the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next hour at rickemersonshow.com and support. Did I tell you my Will Wheaton thing? I'll tell you a Will Wheaton thing next hour.
Ooh.
Not this hour, so much as next hour.
Okay.
We'll see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. That's Tuesday at noon. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?